All right. Well, this morning, like Gar said, I'm giving a message on the dangers of comparison. So this is just a one-off message in between our sermon series. We got done with Twisted Scripture, which is a great series. I really enjoyed that. And then next week, we're starting a series on the book of Colossians, which is going to be a great book to go through. So hopefully you'll join us for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. But we're going to have some fun this morning talking about this. I'm looking forward to it. I want to tell you first why I'm giving this message about the dangers of comparison. It seems like over this last couple months, I have been inundated with this theme. Everything that I've been reading, books that I've been reading, people I've been talking to, podcasts I've been listening to, all have been having this theme of the dangers of comparison. So every time this happens, when I kind of feel like there's this theme that's like rolling around and I can't get away from it, I always ask why, and usually I pray about it. Usually I'm like, God, why is this going on? Now the problem with praying that prayer is that sometimes the answer is that you have a problem, I have a problem, and God is trying to deal with that in me, which is the case here. So I am going to be speaking out of my own weakness. Hopefully you won't judge me too harshly here because I'm going to be real vulnerable with you this morning. But it's good, right? It's good to when God like is working with you. So I'm speaking out of kind of a raw place a little bit this morning. But I think that some of you will relate. In fact, I know that some of you relate because I've had conversations with you. And you have talked about, oh yeah, I've dealt with that too, the same comparison that you know, I've been comparing my life with other people's lives, which made me feel better about myself, which is the problem. So this is it right here. I'm going to be raw. But you know, you'd think at the age of 40, I would have gotten over this, right? I mean, lived all this life and it's like, man, why am I still tempted to compare my life with other people around me? Why am I tempted to look to the left and the right rather than just looking forward in what God has for me? But I think that it all started at a really young age. I was thinking through this about, like, what's one of the earliest memories I have of comparing what I have to what other people have? And I thought about this time between my second grade and third grade year. So we lived in Eugene, Oregon, and we were moving to Issaquah, Washington. My dad got a job. We're moving up here to Washington. And it was exciting, but I was really nervous about it. You know, it was like new house, new friends, new school, the whole thing. And I remember first walking into our house. And it was really exciting. My dad had gotten there early, and he had set up furniture. He'd set up things. And I was walking through the house looking at everything, and I wandered down the hallway to where my bedroom is, and I opened up the door to my bedroom, and in the middle of my bedroom was this brand-new BMX bike. Yeah, it was so awesome. I loved this bike. It had a blue seat. It had blue handles. It had blue tires, and then it was just chrome everywhere else. And so I loved this bike, and I would just ride it for like hours and hours around the neighborhood. I mean, I just couldn't get enough of it. And then I met a bunch of other little kids, and like we were riding around like a little biker gang of third graders around the neighborhood, and we just loved riding our bikes. And so I spent hours with this bike. And we didn't have any sidewalks in this neighborhood. It was street and then gravel. And so there was this one hill that we would go down, and then we put a ramp in the gravel. So we'd go down as fast as we could, no helmets because it's the 80s, as fast as we could on the pavement, and then cut over into the gravel, and then launch off of this ramp as far as you could, and then hit the gravel, and wherever the back tire landed, that was the furthest person to jump. So we had this big competition. And for quite a while, I was the guy who could jump the furthest. Yeah, it was so awesome. Everyone was envious, I'm sure. But I would sail off on this bike and jump, and everybody's trying to compete with that. And it was so great until one Christmas when my buddy Phil Stromstead ended up getting this bike. I hope he's listening to this. Got this bike. It's a Diamondback bike. You guys remember these Diamondback bikes, how awesome they were? Yeah. I mean, it's got the plastic spokes, which I'm sure had to do with the weight of getting it really light. I mean, it was just cooler looking than my bike in a lot of ways. It had the snake on the front, this Diamondback snake for an emblem. And this bike was super light, so you could like lift it up with one hand. I mean, it was amazing. And so guess what happened? Yeah, Phil jumped further than me. And then I was like, oh no, my world came crashing down. And my bike that I was super happy with, that I loved, that I was so content with, I became very discontent with this bike. All of a sudden, it wasn't good enough because it wasn't a Diamondback. It wasn't light enough. It didn't have all the things that I wanted it to have. And so this thing that I really enjoyed, in comparison to what my buddy had, I became very discontent. And the thing is, this was a never-ending struggle. This was a never-ending battle. As we grew up, I had a buddy who all of a sudden got a motorized go-kart that was like yellow and awesome, and he would zip it around the neighborhood, and his parents said that nobody else could drive it, so he'd like wave as he went by, and we'd be pedaling and sweating, and then all of a sudden everybody's bikes was lame, and we all wanted motorized go-karts. And then, you know what happens, as you get older, there's scooters and motorcycles. Some of my friends got motorcycles and cars, and you're comparing your car to the other person's car. And it just, it was never enough. Like, it wasn't like I was only happy for a short amount of time until I looked to the right and the left and saw what somebody else had, and then all of a sudden what I had wasn't good enough anymore. And you'd think that, like I said, at this point, I would have gotten over that. And in some ways, I have. In some ways, this is kind of a materialistic type view of things, but there's a lot of areas in my life that I have not gotten over this comparing problem. And so this morning, what I want to talk to you about are three specific dangers when it comes to comparing your life to other people. So these are three dangers that I think you can get into. One is discontentment. Along with discontentment, a lot of times comes envy and jealousy, the feeling of inadequacy. There's all sorts of problems with this. We're going to spend some time on that. Number two, wrong goals. By having these inadequate feelings, a lot of times you'll set up wrong goals in your life. And then with those wrong goals, you're always going to have wrong actions. Those are definitely going to follow each other. So this morning, to get started, I want to start you out with a quote from an author. Now, if you're an author, you may not want to compare yourself to this guy. His name's Jack Canfield. He's the co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, and he actually holds the Guinness World Book of Records. I didn't know this until I looked it up. He has the Guinness World Book of Records of having 7 books on the New York Times bestseller list at the same time. So this guy is a pretty amazing author. But anyways, he says this kind of an interesting thing about comparison that I want to start us off with. He says, generally I find that comparison is the fast track to unhappiness. No one ever compares themselves to someone else and comes out even. 9 times out of 10, we compare ourselves to people who are somehow better than us and end up feeling more inadequate. And so this is what I want to focus on this morning. Really, if you don't get anything else out of this message, I'm going to give you a simple phrase that sums this up, and this is what I'm going to keep talking about this morning, is there is no win in comparison. There's no win in comparison. I think intellectually we could agree that there's no win in comparison. It always leads to destruction. However, why do we still do it? We're going to talk about that. So let's talk about discontentment. Let's talk about the first one. It can be really hard to be content with what God has given you specifically if you're constantly looking at people around you. And this is a problem. Actually, what God has given you will never be enough if you're constantly comparing what you have with what other people have. And this is a battle today like no other time in history. I think that you would agree. The pre-internet days, most of your comparison had to do like with face-to-face. It was like in real time and space interaction with people, right? And they could tell you, oh, I got the best kid in the world. They're so happy all the time. They're awesome. But then you would actually go to their house and you'd see their kid and be like, oh, that kid's throwing a tantrum. Like, he is not the best kid in the world. And then you'd feel better about your own kid. That's the problem. But you would get into these comparisons, but it would all have to do in real time and space. But now with the internet, we really are provided an endless black hole of comparison. There's this endless streams of pictures that are coming in of these ideal families and idyllic situations, and everybody smiles on their face, and you start thinking, well, what's going on here? Like, is everybody's life better than mine? Steve Furtick says something that I thought was great. He's a pastor, and he says, the reason we struggle with insecurity is because we compare our behind the scenes with everyone's highlight reel. And isn't that true? Like, we start looking at our own life, at our behind the scenes of like, man, like I'm doing these things, and we start comparing ourselves to other people, and then we start thinking, man, they're off in Hawaii having a great time. And I'm sitting here doing this thing that's like annoying me or whatever. And so people, like, they're going to put the picture of the beach on Facebook, right? They're going to put the idyllic picture of the beach. They're going to put the picture of their beautiful baby, like, who's smiling all the time. It must be the happiest baby in the world. And that's fine, actually. But the problem is if you start looking at those pictures and then start comparing yourself to those pictures and start somehow feeling inadequate, because people are not going to put the picture of how they lost their luggage on that trip. They're not going to post the pictures of their 2 to 4 a.m. crying, screaming baby who pooped everywhere. Praise the Lord they don't put that on Facebook. But still, the thing is, if you're only seeing these idyllic situations, and somehow, in comparison, you might get into the problem, and this has been my problem in the past, of thinking that somehow my life is worse than everybody else's. And that's ridiculous. I know it's ridiculous intellectually. I mean, I was just in Kenya. I've seen how other people live in the world. Yet for some reason, I can get wrapped up in this trap of thinking that, oh man, everybody else is able to go on vacations like so much more than me, or everybody else is having such a good time. And then I start comparing myself to that person, and it's not good. Now, the thing is that we're going to be faced with this temptation. It's just a matter of what we do with it. There was this pastor that talked about temptation in this way that always stuck with me. I heard it years and years ago. But he said, temptation is like a bird that lands on your head. And what are you going to do with that bird? You can either swat the bird away and the bird's going to fly away. Or you can let that bird sit there. And you can let that bird make a nest on your head. And you can let that bird live there. And then that bird is always there. And that temptation is always there. But you had the choice way early on to knock that bird and let it fly away. But instead, you let that bird make a home in your head. And that temptation will always be there. And you'll face it every day. And the thing is, and when I give in this to this temptation, like I said, I'll be thinking, well, I'm unclogging the toilet. Man, I'm unclogging this toilet while my buddy Jeremiah's in Hawaii. Which is true, but... Or I'll be mowing the lawn and thinking, oh, I'm mowing this lawn and my buddy's riding around in his new Tesla, which is also true. I saw that on Facebook, which is great for him. So happy. Okay, now I'm going to be totally honest with you and raw. Honestly, the pictures of vacation has always been the hardest for me. I don't know what it is, but like I'll see people like on vacation, or like I'll see this picture of this place that I really want to go to, and I'll start consuming my time with how to get there. It's ridiculous. I'll like start looking at booking.com and TripFinder and trying to find like the perfect deal and can we afford this? And then I'm just thinking, oh man, it would be so great if we could get there. And the thing is that all of a sudden my mundane, like regular life, like starts taking a back seat to that. Things start becoming more annoying to me. I start becoming more and more discontent. It's really hard for me to be present and think, oh, like it's a beautiful day and I'm having fun here in church with all of my friends. Instead, I'll be thinking, oh man, I can't wait to get over this so I can figure out how to get to that place. It's crazy. And the thing is that when it gets really bad, I'll start thinking, instead of looking to God for the solution to my problem, I'll start thinking that the solution to my problem is that vacation. It can get that bad. And it, well, frankly, has gotten that bad. But the thing is that what I know that I'm doing intellectually is I'm trying to fix outward circumstances for an inward problem. There's an inward issue going on there. There's an inward thing going on where somehow I'm not content with what's going on in my life, or it's an attitude, or it's something, and I'm trying to fix that by fixing outward things. And that is not a solution. You know, I want to focus a little bit on King Solomon this morning. We're going to use him as an example. A, he was one of the wisest men to ever walk the face of the earth. I think the wisest besides Jesus. And he says some really interesting things. The first one I want to give you is the one that he says in Proverbs 14:30. He says, envy rots the bones. It rots the bones. And this is, like, when I saw this, it really spoke to me because I was like, man, this is what was going on. Like, with the discontentment, with me not feeling good about my regular life, it was just rotting my bones. It was eating me away. And if we continue to always be comparing ourselves with how much somebody has, or how great they are, or how funny they are, or whatever it is that is your issue that you're comparing, it'll rot your bones. The 10th commandment says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor his BMW, nor anything that is your neighbor's, right? So why that with do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, and you put that in with the same category? It's because of this. It's because I believe that God knew it would rot your bones. You would never accomplish fully what God had for you in this life, this abundant life that he has for you, if we get wrapped up into this comparison. Again, there is no win in comparison. Now, we're going to talk about some much bigger solutions to some of these issues. But just from what I've talked about right now, I'm just going to give you a couple tidbits of things that I have decided to do. I do not think that that Facebook is the root of all evil. I don't. I think that Facebook can be fine. In fact, I connect with a lot of people through Facebook. It is fine. But what I started realizing is that me personally, maybe not you, in my own life, when I had it on my phone, any extra time that I had, I found myself just scrolling through, just looking at all these pictures and everything. I didn't realize, I didn't put the connection between the two, that was connected to some of my anxiety and some of my discontentment until I read this book a couple months ago that talked about this, and I just took it off my phone. So I just pulled the app off my phone, and then all of a sudden I started realizing, this is what I first realized, is that I was going to my phone like two or three times a day when the app was gone, looking for Facebook automatically, and realized, oh, it's not there. And then I would get these email notifications. You've missed 20 notifications on Facebook. And I'd think, oh man, maybe I should just reinstall it just so I could see what happened. And I was like, no, I can't do that. That's not good. And I'd start, also what happened is that the only way I could look at Facebook was on my computer. And I'm busy on my computer. I'm working and stuff. And so I don't spend time on Facebook on my computer. So I found that there was long stints of time that I wasn't on there. Yet there was still something in me, this like fear of missing out. I guess that's a real thing. People talk about that as a disorder, the fear of missing out. And I didn't even realize it was there. And then once I really quit that out of my life, I started realizing about a month in that, man, I feel a little bit more content. I don't feel quite as anxious. I didn't equate the two until all of a sudden, and probably God just showed it to me, that those two, for me, was a connection. I don't know if this is true, but sometimes I feel like, man, if my family would just live on a farm and there's no internet and there was no anything, and then we just went to the store and back, that I would probably be more content, because I know that the knowledge of what is out there is a lot of times the problem. It's that when we're aware of what our neighbor has, when we're aware of what's going out there in the world, that sometimes then we'll get into that vicious cycle of comparison. When the kids were young, and I'm always hesitant to give like examples, because I definitely don't want anybody to feel like, oh, like you're putting that on me and that's not my problem. These are my personal things. I'm definitely not putting this on you. So I just want to preface that. But when the kids were young, we didn't have cable TV because we couldn't afford it. But then we just stopped having cable TV because we just never did it. And so the kids, when they were young, they would just watch videos and they would watch like PBS because that's what we get on the antenna. And so they never watch commercials. And so Amanda and I were talking about this, how funny it was when our kids were young. They're older now. But when they were young, they inevitably, every time we went to a place where there was cable TV and they saw those commercials, man, they would beg us for that toy that was so awesome that they just had to have. And I was like, wait, you have all this stuff. You don't need that. But they all of a sudden became very discontent with the things they had because there was this awesome thing that they became aware of through these commercials. And then we were having to battle that. And so I'm just saying, there might be some simple things. If this speaks to one or two people in the room, that'd be great. Like if like you were like, oh man, let's just test that out. You may not even think it's a problem. You may just want to test it out anyways. Just kind of take a break from social media. I was even talking to a couple of guys yesterday who said that like they were just really feeling like the necessity of being present in their families, like on the weekends, and how and it was Garth, and he had read this article and said that like, it was encouraging people to shut down everything on the weekends, all electronics, phones, everything, and really be present with your family and your friends and try that for a while. That really spoke to me yesterday. So anyways, there are sometimes very simple little things that you can adjust in your life that will help you with this problem. Number two, wrong goals. So this is a tough one because I think that it is human nature to compete. I don't feel like I'm a very competitive person, but there are definitely areas in my life where I want to compete. And the thing is that I start realizing that I want to put an est behind everything that I do sometimes, you know, and people do this. They want to be the wealthiest. They want to be the strongest. They want to be the fastest. They want to be the prettiest. So they want to get like an est. They're with their friends and it's like, oh, you may be okay, but I want to be great. I want to be better than you are at whatever you're doing. And I think the reality of it is that there's a little bit of a me monster in everybody. I don't know if you've ever heard this before about the me monster. And I could try to explain it to you, and I was trying to figure out a way to do this. I'm like, I'm just going to show a video because there is this guy named Brian Regan who is a comedian who just brilliantly illustrates this. So we're going to watch this here. Beware of the me monster. Oh, man. Amanda and I do this to each other. I just did this to her in Kenya. I was in Kenya and she was home and she wrote me this text this one day and she's like, I have ants in my office. I can't believe I'm the only one who has ants in my office. Nobody else's office have ants. And I just had this like crazy day and I was like, well, I came home, I was in a typhoon, and there was construction in front of our hotel, and there was a big cliff that we had to get over because of the construction stopped because of the rain, and we couldn't get into our hotel, so we had to go over this 4-foot cliff in the mud, and then there was no water when I got there. My windows were open, so my bed is wet, and then I had to go and actually take a shower out in a typhoon, and she was all, you me, stop it. Like, well, all right, so you can use that. So I am not saying that we shouldn't excel in the amazing things that God has given us, right? God has given us things that we should excel in, and we should go for that. It's really more of the motivation behind the things that we're doing. I mean, like I said, there always is going to be somebody with a bigger est than your est. And if you're constantly competing with that, it is a never-ending cycle. Unless you've walked on the moon, then you will win at every party. This is great. But it actually has the potential to harm you and everybody around you. And I want to explain this by giving you this personal story, and this has happened to me a few times, where there'll be somebody at church that will come to me and go, hey, you know what, I visited this other church, and they're pretty much doing the same thing that you're doing, but they are doing it way more successful than you. And so if you get the chance, you ought to like maybe learn something from that pastor or that church, which is fine. At my best, I'm able to take in that information and go, okay, yeah, I should learn. You know, I mean, it's good to learn. I have other, you know, pastors in my life, and I learn from them, and they learn from me, and that's great. At my worst, I will feel so inadequate about who I am and who God has called to me that I will try to be somebody that God has not called me to be. And that is not good for anybody. I don't know if you've ever seen this where somebody has done that. And like I said, it's good to learn from other churches, it's good to learn from other pastors, but we better authentically be who God has called us to be, or things are liable to go sideways. And so you definitely don't want to use it as an excuse never to learn, but you also want to make sure that you are authentically who God has called you to be, because we have to be this way. It's only good for everybody if we are authentically who God has created us to be, who God has created Corbett to be. And I have to go, okay, that's a good thing for who God created Corbett to be. And if I tried to be somebody else, like if I tried to come up here and be a different type of speaker, you guys may look at me and go, man, what are you doing? Like, why are you being that way? And I struggled with that actually at the beginning. And then I started realizing, man, I just got to be who I am and just have to, you know, share in the way that I share. I have this buddy named Matt, and he is great. He is like one of my best friends. We were freshman year roommates at SPU over 20 years ago, and we have really grown our friendship together, and we learn a lot from each other. He planted a church down in Auburn, and we get together, and we do, you know, learn from each other, and it's great. Early on in our friendship, we had a hard time with each other. Like, we are very different people. And we each come to the table with some different types of gifts. I mean, he just looks different than me. He's 6'3". He's a huge guy. He's super loud. He's super boisterous. Center of every room. People like just love him. And as loud as I am up here, I am a little bit more reserved in some of my social situations, especially in comparison to him. And I didn't try to be him, and he didn't try to be me. And what we realized through a lot of conversation is that, man, it's good that God created us differently. Like, Matt is going to reach people for God that I will not reach because of who he is and who God created him to be. But then vice versa, I'm actually going to reach people that Matt will not be able to reach because of who I am and my personality and how I connect with people. And we start realizing it's good, and that's the way that God made it. God made us to be part of a body. Like Jesus talks about it that way. We're all part of a body, bringing together these unique gifts and talents that God has created us to have. And we're doing that when we operate in a body. The body is great. Like, if we all tried to be a head, or we all tried to be a feet, or we all tried to be a hand, that would be a weird-looking body. And also, if a part of the body got cut off, and all of a sudden we didn't have a hand because that hand didn't want to be a hand anymore, that would be really ugly to have a hand all by itself without a body. We all are created in a way to operate as a body and to be very happy with who God created us to be. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to talk about this in a little bit. There's so much freedom in that when you could just freely be who God has created you to be, for you to be comfortable in your own skin and for you to move forward in the things that God has for you. There's nothing like it. We're going to go back to Solomon for a little bit because, again, like I said, I think he has some very fascinating things to say on the subject. He wrote the book Ecclesiastes. It's funny, it's not usually one that I gravitate towards because he talks a lot about things being meaningless. It seems like kind of a downer sometimes, and I'm like kind of a positive person, so I sometimes struggle through this book. But man, this passage is so perfect when it comes to talking about this. So Ecclesiastes 4:4, Solomon says, I saw that all toil and all achievement spring from one person's envy of another. So I was like, wow, this is fascinating. So A, this isn't a new problem. I mean, this was written like over 3,000 years ago. So you look at that and go, wow, that's amazing. So Solomon, obviously, in his sphere of influence and what was going on, he just saw people determining their worth by others' achievements. They were looking at themselves and going, okay, I'm okay or not okay based on the other people's achievements around me. And I'm sure he saw people going, oh, I'm okay, but then I look over here, oh, I'm not okay, but then I look at them and I'm okay. And it's like, what a weird way to live your life. I mean, there's no peace in that. There's no, and he actually says that it's meaningless. The second part of this, he says, it's this too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Do you think about that, chasing after the wind? I think it's a great analogy, because how ridiculous is that? I mean, you're not going to catch the wind. You'd just be wandering around in circles trying to chase the wind. And that's what he was saying. You're all just wandering around in circles. This is meaningless. It's like chasing after the wind. Now, in order to get Solomon's full meaning, we have to continue on to the next part, because you might be tempted to say at this point, well, am I just supposed to sit back? Am I just supposed to, like, not do anything, not strive, not, like, do anything? But this is Solomon. I mean, we have to pay attention to who the author is. I mean, he was a very busy person. He was the wisest man, and so, like, kings and queens were coming to him for advice and for wisdom. He was building temples. He was in charge of a lot of people. He had a lot of wives, a lot of gold to count. He was a busy guy. I mean, he had a lot of things going on, right? He was not a guy that was going to sit around. And I think he knew that, like, with this first part, that people might immediately go there, because the second part tells us that. In verse 5, he says, fools fold their hands and ruin themselves. So immediately he just takes away that question. He's like, you don't just sit around. I mean, you strive for what God wants for you, but it's the motivation is the problem. It's why you're striving for those things. And if your achievement and your toil and everything that you're doing is based on other people's, on what they're doing and other people's achievements, then it is meaningless. Like, you will be wandering around in circles, and nobody wants that. But then he says something just absolutely brilliant in verse 6 that I love. This imagery is something that I think we could take with us this week. It says, better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. Man, I love this imagery. Better one handful. Just think about that. One handful of whatever God wants. It's great. God can put in it or take out of it whatever he wants, because he knows best for our life. Like, I mean, what freedom there is in following God, who loves you and understands you and knows you better than anything. The problem is that what we tend to do, or at least what the temptation to do, is to look to the right, look to the left, and just take, and just take more, and just take as much as we can from the world, because you saw this, and ooh, I need that, and oh, I saw this, and ooh, I should have that too. And all of a sudden, you find yourself living your life like this. There's no tranquility. There's no peace. It's a terrible way to live your life. And that's what he's trying to say. Better one hand, just happy, full of tranquility. Just give me, Lord, what I want. Don't give me more. Don't give me less. Then, oh, I got to take as much as I can. And what happens when you live your life like this, when you've taken as much as you can? There, you wish that you had another hand. Or you wish I had a third or a fourth hand, right? Because there's always more. I mean, this isn't going to be enough, like, if that's what you're striving for, because there will always be somebody with a bigger est. There will always be somebody with something more than you, and you might have the tendency of doing this until you just are going crazy, and that's no good for anybody. We got to find out what areas of our life are we doing this, and that's sometimes a really hard thing, because introspection is hard. It's hard to look through your life, because sometimes you might just go, hey, this isn't really for me. Like, I just don't feel like I have that problem. But then when you really start looking through your life, you might start realizing, you start praying about it, and then God starts maybe revealing things to you that you might be doing this. And I think that you got to kind of look through your life. Sometimes I think it comes up in situationally. It comes up in, like, just things that you're doing in your life that all of a sudden you go, oh, wow, man, I'm doing this. I was just really trying to encourage my kid and say, hey, you got to do better. You got to do better, because I was looking at somebody else's kid and how good they were doing. That you might be doing this if you're doing that. Or every time you look at something that you have, become dissatisfied in comparison to what somebody else has had, you might be doing this. Every time you ignore your family because you're striving for financial gain or some type of honor, you know, maybe you're getting some type of value in your work that you shouldn't have, you might be doing this. You might be going, hey, I need to achieve. I need to get better and better and better and better. And then you start comparing yourself to the other people. I need to be better than them. And you find yourself constantly doing this in your life. And that's just no way to live. We have to recognize this. We have to see these areas in our life when we're like this. And the problem with doing this is that when we have the wrong goal, when we have the wrong goal of striving for this type of thing, guaranteed you'll have wrong action. One follows the other. Wrong goals, wrong actions. It's going to happen. Now, when the wrong actions happen, really terrible things can happen. Financial debt or financial ruin sometimes. I've been there. Like I back in the day before being a pastor, I was flipping homes and I got into the situation, I was making money and more money, and then I really felt like, oh, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do, and kind of put away my calling to be a pastor. And then all of a sudden I found that we made this really terrible investment and lost six figures in a week. And so it's like, I've been there. I've made really terrible choices in my life. So I'm speaking from experience here. Wrong goals will make wrong actions. I had the wrong goals in mind when I was doing that, and thus in turn, turn into wrong actions. Now, God redeemed it all. God redeemed it all because, you know, I humbled myself to him, but I could have kept doing this and went, well, I lost it. Well, I'm going to go gain it back in my own strength and my own power. And I tell you what, that would have been really awful. I'm really glad that I submitted and prayed and let God speak to me in that. It could destroy relationships, this. You could be thinking to yourself, man, you look at everybody else and you're looking at maybe social media and you're like, man, everybody else seems to be happier than me. I must be married to the wrong person. I've seen people do that. It's a really terrible thing to get into, to think that everybody's life is somehow better than you and then you'd be discontent even with your spouse. That's a terrible thing to get into. And the thing is, when you get face to face with those people, so often you'll find out, oh man, they actually have some things going on too. And I don't know if you've seen that, where you'll see like, oh wow, this person, they had their anniversary and they're on vacation, it's so awesome. And you call them and they're like, man, work is like falling apart and like things are really difficult and their kids are having a tough time. But what they put out there is idyllic, and I understand that. But if you're always comparing yourself, you're behind the scenes to their highlight reel, we could actually start being discontent with things that we really shouldn't be discontent with. You'd be thinking, everybody's kids are better than mine. Man, mine are always like struggling. It seems like everybody else's kids are doing better. And then you maybe start becoming, discontent with who you are as a parent. And maybe you start feeling insecure and you start making bad choices there as well. I'm just giving you a bunch of different examples here, not even supposed to trying to be a downer, but I do want to give different examples so that we might spark some ideas about how this may look. And the thing is, we have to spend more time looking in the mirror. This is essential. We can't just go through life and not spend some time looking at these things inside. If not, we're going to start trying to fix those things in the wrong way. We'll start trying to fix them through circumstances rather than looking at the inside and going, God, what's going on in here? Like, what's going on? I remember this one time I was working with my cousins on a roof when I was in my 20s. We all had our shirts off because I was in my 20s at the time. I'm not going to do that now. But we had our shirts off. We're working on this roof, and I was up on top of this roof, and I didn't want to come down, and it was in August, and it was super hot, and I was like, man, I really should put some sunscreen on, but I'll just pay attention to how my cousin's doing and kind of base how I'm doing based on how he's doing. And so I kept looking over, and no, his back's not too red yet. You know, I'm fine. I look over. No, he's still doing fine. I'm still doing fine. Well, my cousin's got like olive skin and he just tans. I don't tan. I burn. And I burn so bad. I was sick for like a week afterwards because I kept comparing myself to them. And the thing is I could tell you so many stories on how I've burned myself literally and figuratively, in this way, by trying to compare myself to other people. Introspection is hard, but it's necessary. And sometimes it takes just asking ourselves the right question. And so I'm going to give you a few questions, and hopefully you'll kind of take this in and just think about it this week. If anything else, like you may think that there's no problems, and that's great, but if something does get brought up, I'll tell you what, you're going to live a much better life because of it. So we have to think about these things. So the first question: where am I trying to change outside, or the outside, when I should be changing the inside? So that's what I was just talking about. Outside circumstances trying to change the thing that's going on inside of me. Number two, where am I competing when I should be serving? Like, where am I just like, I'm always trying to like get above the next person rather than going, man, I came here to serve. I came here on this earth to be a servant and to love and to care for people. And so are there areas of your life that you find it difficult to accept other people's victories? You know, maybe they're having this great victory and you're finding yourself being more jealous than excited about their victory. If that's the case, you may need to think about that a little bit. And then where am I chasing after the wind? You know, where are there areas in your life where you might just be tired. You might just be going, wow, I just feel like I'm toiling and I don't have tranquility anymore and I'm just striving. If that's the case, you might be chasing after the wind. You might be comparing yourself to other people or striving in areas where you just shouldn't strive. I mean, there are areas that we try to strive in, even if we're given it, it wouldn't be good for us, right? Because it's not really what we think that we need is not always necessarily the case. A lot of times, God knows, well, all the time, God knows better than we do about what we need and what we don't need. So the outgrowth of this, the outgrowth of any type of comparison is jealousy, insecurity, discontentment, then love, peace, worship will get choked out at the heart. We won't be able to be free in what God has given us, and sometimes we'll end up staying right where we are doing this rather than doing this with one hand and being able to move forward in what God has for us. And I tell you what, it is so awesome when you move forward in what God has for you. Because the cool thing is that God will work on something with you and he'll get you into the next step. And then all of a sudden, just the floodgates will open. I've seen this in people's lives where they're just sitting there and they're toiling and they don't know why. And then all of a sudden they pray about it and they realize some inconsistencies they have in their life. And then bam, I mean, there's just freedom and there's just peace and there's just joy. You know, I mean, it's so awesome to live that life when you're just happy to serve and you're happy to love and you're happy to be exactly who God created you to be. I tell you what, there's no life like that. I promise you that you will start getting up just excited about the day because you'll be excited to see what God has for you because God has something specific for you that's not somebody else's path. He has your own path in mind. And then when you start moving out into that path, there's freedom. And it's an abundant life that God has for us, full of joy, full of life, and we all want to live that life. I want that for you. I want that for every person in this room because when we start doing that, like I said, it doesn't just affect you. It affects the people around you. It affects the church community. It affects us all. And when we start living authentically who God created us to be, we start operating as a body. And then I'll tell you what, the floodgates will open. The floodgates will open in your life. The floodgates will open in the church, in all of the things that you do. You will be blessed, I promise you. So that's what I want to leave you with. That's what I want for you, desperately. I want that for you. And so I want to pray a blessing over you. I hope that you'll spend a little bit of time just thinking about this, thinking about these questions, and then just realizing that God has great things in store for you. He loves you. He has amazing, unlimited potential things in your life. And we have to live into that. We have to live into the thing that God has called you to do. So let's pray. Father, it's good to be in your house, Lord. It's so good to worship you with these wonderful friends and family, Father. We just we thank you that we get to be in your presence, Lord. I just thank you that you speak loudly. Lord, I pray that if there are things in our life that we need to pay attention to, that we're having some real heart-to-hearts with you where you're able to show us things. And we just have to come in that humble. We have to come into that knowing that you know best for us. Lord, it's good when you correct us. And it just shows how much you love us. And it shows us that you know what's best. And it's good to be in that position. So, Father, I pray that you would work through our lives in that, that we would all see that you have a path specifically for us to walk out in. I pray that if there are areas where we're comparing, if there are areas where we're discontent for the wrong reasons, and it almost always is the wrong reason, Father, I pray that we would be able to correct that and that we would use your strength to do it, not on our own. So, Father, help us to be at peace and in this life with one hand full of tranquility, and help us not to live our lives fist clenched over all the things that are around us, Lord. I just thank you, Father, for loving us, for helping us in this. In Jesus' name, amen.